think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 240 of Low Limit Football on this 29th of April, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have crowned three of the five champions in the top five leagues in Europe. Some are happy that they're champs. Most are actually disappointed, and we're going to discuss that in a moment. The EPL title race has become a massive staring contest, with neither City nor Liverpool blinking yet. Could one of them flinch? Stu, we only have a few more matches to find out. We have our final four in the Champions League and Europa League. We'll discuss some of the surprises and this week's matchups as they kick off the semifinal matches coming up tomorrow. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was signed to a permanent contract on March 28th. Since then, Man United has been kicked out of the Champions League and have only won two of their eight matches overall, falling out of the top four spots in the Premier League for qualification to the Champions League next year. Was he the right choice, and what needs to be fixed at Manchester United? We're going to discuss that and much, much more with our great friend Beyond the Pitches, Phil Brown, who'll be joining us in just a minute. But first, let me get my co-host in here, fresh off his trip from Manchester and Newcastle, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Did they make you a Geordie?
Of course they did.
Honorary, right?
Yeah, an honorary one. I think I've been offered 49 different drinks in the span of 72 hours. No, but thank you for introducing me. It's been a while, Joe. It's been quite a interesting last few weeks. Like I said, I'll mention my trip to Newcastle, to England in general, was fantastic. I saw a good game. They won 3-1, hat-trick by Jose Perez. Weather was nice. Sunny, warm, people were so nice. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, I mean, and you said, well, the one thing that I took from it when you and I talked about it was that the people were nice, and that you really enjoyed the people that were there at Newcastle and the way they treated you and just the overall feel in general. So it sounds like a real successful trip, and are you going to go back?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, I have a 1-0 record so far.
There you go.
So if it makes me feel any better, I would like a season ticket. That way you could see them win the Premier League.
Absolutely. One other thing I wanted to mention is that last night we recorded the first of our 12 shows, a series that we're doing under the This Week in Football title. We did last year. We did 32 shows covering all 32 teams of the World Cup. We're going to do 12 shows this year covering the Copa America teams, and we'll be releasing them as we do them. And Rob, time permitting, you and I discussed that we're going to try to do a quick 3 or 4 preview show for the Gold Cup here in the United States for CONCACAF if we get the chance to do that. So we'll have to see if we have enough time to do it, because you and I have been running around pretty crazy, but the goal is to get the 12 shows in plus another 4, and can't wait to get those released out and definitely keep an eye out for them on all the different platforms that we're on. One thing I want to mention, you know, kind of to take it down a somber notch here is the news that we had this morning that Czech international Josef Sorral had passed away
in a minibus crash in Turkey. He was playing in Turkey for Alanyaspor, and him, along with six other teammates, were in an accident. And Rob, some of these teammates, you'll recognize the names here. English international Stephen Cocker, ex-United player Poppy Cisse was among the passengers in this van, and I don't know the status of their health or if they were injured, but 28-year-old Soral lost his life in this tragic accident again. We see this, you know, unfortunately, so many times. We think back to Emiliano Sala, who, while we have been away for the past couple weeks, Rob, lost his father to a heart attack. Mm-hmm. You know, another sad turn for that family and those folks. But obviously news of someone, you know, talented Soral, who had been playing for the Czech national team, losing his life short. So our thoughts and prayers are, you know, for his family, his teammates, his friends, and everyone involved. And hopefully none of the other players were injured, or if they were injured, that they have a full and speedy recovery and get back onto the pitch and to the things they love to do. So let's do some trivia, right?
Let's do it.
Let's get some trivia. It's tonight. It's my honor. And I have the source of my information is NBC Sports. Okay. So, okay. And the key is not so much that it was printed, and I'm not sure if it was printed or not, but you had to be watching the match yesterday. And okay. I'm talking about the Burnley Manchester City matchup yesterday. Burnley losing 1-0 at home to Manchester City. Like I'd said in the monologue, Man City and Liverpool are in this staring contest where they constantly keep winning and keep kind of trading the lead. But here in the United States, Rob, in American football, we have a saying that football is a game of inches, right? You must have heard that before.
I have.
Going for it on a fourth down and they fall an inch short, or they get an inch over the line, just the nose of the ball. But it's a game of inches, right? And if we translate that over to Europe, it would be a game of millimeters, right? Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, the goal scored by Aguero in that 1-0 victory was just barely over the line. And it could be the difference between City's title and Liverpool's title when we look at this when it's all said and done. So my question to you is, how far over the line was the ball?
I saw this. I know exactly the amount.
Okay.
I was looking at this the other day because I saw the distance between, I think it was John Stones, that like took away the goal for Liverpool back when both the teams played.
That's right.
It's like so close. I mean, wow. If this doesn't excite you, perhaps one of the most exciting title races, not just in English football, but I think in the world in recent times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is just how close it is. It's incredible. And hey, I think goal line technology. I think we have to thank goal line technology for this one.
Sure, sure. And some will say that maybe we need to talk about VAR, because there was in the same match there was what appeared to be a handball. That was not called as well on a Burnley defender. I forget, the name escapes me, but kind of leaned over, got it with his arm and stopped a shot. So, I mean, in the end, City was dominant in the match over Burnley. Absolutely dominant.
100%.
I think the possession was somewhere in the 80s. It's just crazy, crazy, you know, times. And Liverpool and City are on this collision course to see who will blink first to go and award the other one the title, or City may just stick their nose out in front and just keep it there the rest of the way. They only have a few matches left over the season, so we'll have to see. Let's get into opening thoughts topic, because kind of it leads into it a little bit, because and I alluded to it again in the monologue, we have our Final Four in the Champions League coming up this week. City is one of them. They're going to face Barcelona on Wednesday as one of the Final Four. The other tie is between Tottenham Hotspur and Ajax. And we'll get to that tie in a minute. Let's talk about the Barca-Liverpool one first, because I think it affects Liverpool's chances of possibly winning the EPL. It affects certainly their chances of winning the Champions League. They do run their first match of this tie at the Camp Nou on Wednesday. And it's just a massive undertaking. Barcelona, taking it from their standpoint, Barca locks up their La Liga title on the weekend. They look like they're going to run through and win the Copa del Rey. Barca are staring at another historic treble for them. And it's something that you could see the emotion on Lionel Messi's face when they lifted that La Liga trophy on the weekend. This is what they want. They want to collect this hardware. And I think that where Barca has won this title, meaning La Liga title, is something where they have been gearing towards and they have been playing aggressively towards. And they have now finished that task and put it behind them just days before they have the final task at hand, which is this Champions League. I think Barca wrapping up their title when they did bodes very well for them versus Liverpool, because Liverpool are going to have to play their next few matches. They're going to have to keep pace with City, who has become absolutely relentless in this chase. And I don't know that Liverpool is, at this late in the season, going to be able to continue to fight this fight, especially given that, you know, they have Newcastle on the road coming up in league on the weekend. They have Wolves coming up the following weekend. There are not easy matches for them at all. Two Barca matches, Newcastle, and Wolves. This is a hell of a task. And I think for me, Rob, and I want to give it to you, I think Barca have the better path in this tie. What do you think?
Well, I think just because you kind of alluded there, you have to look at how Barcelona already wrapped up the league. So I think now they're only focusing on that tie, essentially three games that they want to play, be it the two legs against Liverpool and, of course, the Champions League final, if they make it. Whereas Liverpool, you know, they still have to deal with the league title. You know, they obviously have City breathing down their shoulder. Obviously, it's still this close. But now you kind of have to think to yourself, you have to put yourself in the Liverpool's shoes in the way. Mm. I think for them, I think just because of everything that they have been through over the last 30 years, that was the last time they won the first division of English football, I think the Premier League means more for them. And I just think, and obviously, yeah, I think they're professionals and saying that they want to go one game at a time and go for everything. But I just feel that for the Liverpool fans, perhaps they're more they really want to win the Premier League much more than the Champions League.
Okay.
Maybe that's just how I feel, because I feel like, you know, they did make the Champions League last year. They made the final only to lose to Real Madrid. But I just think that the expectations are so different this year, because they honestly do have a team that could compete and win both titles, okay, without any shadow of doubt. But I just feel that just because of all the circumstances that they're going through, the fact that it's essentially three games that will make or break a season, that can make a season successful or mm-hmm. can make a season a failure, like we had mentioned prior to the start of the show, Joe. We mm-hmm. talked about how these teams perceive failure and perceive success. You know, Barcelona, if they do not win this tie against Liverpool, even though they are going to perhaps win a double, and they still have the Copa del Rey final, they did win La Liga, it's still, in their eyes, just because of all the expectations that have been given them and how much time has been given to this team. It's now been four years since their last Champions League title. It would be a failure. Mm. For Liverpool, on the other hand, it's a different story. Because you think about it, if they win the Premier League but lose the Champions League, they would be perceived as a success, because it's perhaps the thing that they wanted so much, is to finally win a league title. Mm. Now, if it was reversed, that's a different story, because they already have the Champions League to their disposal. The last time that they won it was 2005. But I just think that the Premier League just means so much. Yes, being champions of England and being champions of Europe are two completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel that when you're looking at the perspective from Liverpool, I could be wrong on all this, and would like to see what Phil's thoughts about this, even though he is a Man United fan. I just think for Liverpool fans, it's much more meaningful to win this league title rather than to win the Champions League. Because I just feel that everything that they've gone through, all the, I don't want to say curses, but everything that they've gone through with the team that they have, just being there so close, finally have a team that could actually compete to win it, I think would mean much more. Which is why I feel that Barcelona are going to take true advantage into this tie. Because I think for them, that title that they can win in Madrid means much more than to the Liverpool fans.
But let me ask you this. Wouldn't that line of thought, if you're Liverpool and you're truly thinking that way, wouldn't that line of thought be short-sighted? Because in reality, Liverpool could win the rest of their Premier League matches and not win the title.
Well, that's the thing. That's right. The thing. You know, it's weird, because this is something that not a lot of teams are looking into, because mm-hmm. you don't have many teams that are competing for a league title and the Champions League. The last team I could remember, I think, it was Atletico Madrid, when they, you know, remember they won on the last day against Barcelona, or like mm-hmm. they won the title only to lose short at the Champions League final. But what do you think meant more for them? I think that league title was, yes, the Champions League is the ultimate destiny for any team in the world. I think that's the dream of anyone. But I just feel, in my personal level, I just think just because of the situation that they've been placed in, just because they've built a team that essentially, I think that was the goal overall. I think if you look at the start of the season, when you were picking all the favorites, you had City and Liverpool up there as one of the favorites. Mm-hmm. You didn't have, though, with the exception, I think, with City, you didn't have them being favorites to win the Champions League. You know, you had Juventus, you had Barcelona, you had Real Madrid, you had, you know, to an extent, PSG, you know, you had those teams. Mm-hmm. Liverpool were there, but they weren't at the top. So I just feel that for them, it would mean much more to win this Premier League title. It's difficult. It's very hard to – I wouldn't even want to imagine what it's like to be a Liverpool fan at this stage, because you're kind of divided. Because how would you feel if you would win one title but lose out on this one, or, you know, not, or winning both, or winning nothing at all? That, those are three situations that the teams could be in. That they could win one title, they could win both titles, or nothing.
Or nothing.
So
right.
it's kind of weird, but I think for me, I think that Premier League title means a lot more to these Liverpool fans than it is in the Champions League.
It's the elusiveness of it, right? I mean, that's plain and simple. It's the elusiveness of the title that they're after. They've won the Champions League. You know, they've won the Champions League proper.
Yeah, five times, to be exact.
Right. So, I mean, it's not something that they haven't won before. But like you said, they've in its present state, they've never won the Premier League. So, I agree.
Put yourself in the shoes of a Liverpool fan. Imagine you're a Liverpool fan. What would you be more happy with? Obviously to win both, but you have to pick one.
It's hard, but for me, it would be Champions League. Because it is the most prestigious club title in the world.
Right, but I just think that for them, especially after everything that they went through.
Right.
I think they're the exception. I think if this was any other team in the world, yeah, they would much prefer to win the Champions League. But I just think for them, it means so much more to win a Premier League title. And I've spoken to Liverpool fans, and they told me, and obviously I'm not speaking for everyone,
right,
but from what I've spoken, you know, they really want to win the Premier League much more than the Champions League, because they think we already won it. We already won it five times.
Unbelievable.
But we haven't won this current state of the Premier League title. You know, United have won it. Leicester have won it. Blackburn have won it. Chelsea have won it. Manchester City have won it. Arsenal won it. Now it's our turn. So I just feel that that's what I would feel if I was a Liverpool fan.
It's just unbelievable to, you know, I mean, I understand. I know exactly what you mean. It's just to sit there and think about the fact that it, not to call the Premier League title a second place title. Do you know what I mean? That's not how I want to describe it, but it is not as prestigious a title as the Premier League. But again, I understand what you're saying. You know, it's the girl you've never gone out on the date with. You know what I mean? It's
right.
That's what it is. It's the unobtainable object. As much as you have all of this gold, right? There's this one piece of silver that you can't get. And all of a sudden that piece of silver becomes more valuable because you can't get it. So I get it. I understand completely, you know, what you're saying there. It's just, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around it. Let's look at the other tie real quick, because I know Phil is ready and just waiting for us. Ajax and Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously these two teams, if you wanted to talk about David versus Goliath, this is going to be the David end of the table, right? The Barca Liverpool end is going to be the Goliath end of the table. Massive clubs, big spenders, lots of money over there at Barca, lots of money spent at Liverpool, prestigious players, massive transfers to bring in guys like Alisson and Virgil van Dijk. You know, just loads of money aimed at winning titles. And then we go to the other side. We go to Tottenham Hotspur and Ajax. Ajax, a team that has already started to sell off their pieces. Frankie de Jong going in the winter window to Barcelona, and he's going to finish out the season at Ajax and then go over. The talk of Matthias de Ligt that's going to be going, that's going to possibly be sold. Van der Beek is supposed to be possibly sold. Dusan Tadic might be sold again after having a great Champions League. This is an Ajax club, Rob, that when we talk about it, I feel almost like the Monaco club from 2 years ago. You know, all the big names, the Bernardo Silvas, the Benjamin Mendes, the Time Bakayokos, you know, the resurgence of Radamel Falcao, Valerie Germain, just all these big, big names that were at that club under Leo Jardim, and they just dismantled it completely. I mean, they just took a match and burned it to the ground. And as well as, you know, as historically well or as historically good as Ajax has been, I feel like they've got this golden generation of players at their club right now, and they're looking to cash in on it. But Ajax, I think, is a team or a club that is really good at, you know, selling off these massive pieces and then using the money to locate the next talent and then developing that talent and then making more money off of the next talent. So it's a wicked cycle. And right now, Ajax is at the top of that wicked cycle. Defeating Juventus on 3-2 on aggregate, it was a massive, massive undertaking, especially when you go to Turin and win 2-1, being down 1-0 in the match. I think shows incredible intestinal fortitude on a team that is average 23, 24 years old. And it was a feat. And Rob, you heard me say it. I expected Juve to beat Ajax. I mean, truth be told. But I said, and you and I have talked about this a few times, Ajax was one of those teams that I did not want to face. Because
I remember that.
They play so fearless. They play so fast. They play so young. And they did just those things, and in the end proved to be too much for Juventus to take on. And Juventus looked old. Juventus looked dated to me. They looked like a team that was not able to adjust to what Ajax was offering them, and in the end it killed them. Let's fast forward to the other side of the match here at Tottenham Hotspur, knocking off Manchester City, a team that we've just talked about for a few minutes, a team with ambition of winning multiple titles under Pep Guardiola. This was one of the big ones that they wanted to get, and they're not there. Knocked off, even though losing the second leg 4-3 on the road, but, you know, in the end, winning, moving through on away goals because Spurs wins their first match 1-0 at home. 4-4 aggregate, Spurs goes in on away goals. No Harry Kane in the second leg, right? Injured for the rest of the season. So they did this. It was a team effort. And they survived some seriously squeaky bum time in the last 10, 15 minutes of that second leg. But both teams deserve to be here. I just don't know if either of these teams have enough to knock off Barca or Liverpool in the final when one of them get there.
No, I agree. I think it's been special. Well, maybe to an extent. But I just think that those two, yeah, like you said, it's kind of the Battle of Davids and the Battle of Goliaths for one David versus Goliath final.
Right.
I like this Ajax side. I think it's fresh, it's young, it's pragmatic. Like you said, they beat two teams that, you know, that you thought were dated, kind of Real Madrid, Juventus in a way. I mean, this is a new change in the way of seeing this team, and it's great. And obviously, it's gonna be a shame that this team's gonna get dismantled in about a few months' time, but it's refreshing.
Yeah,
I think personally, and this Spurs side is really good. The fact that they went to this entire Champions League final without spending a dime is incredible.
Amazing.
I think both teams are in a wonderful shape. And would you deserve them as champions? Maybe. I think it would be a phenomenal feat for any of these two teams if they were to beat either Barcelona or Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to pick one, I just like this Ajax. I think Spurs without Harry Kane is going to be big. I think, and Heung-Min Song as well, who's going to miss the first leg.
Right.
They're going to play at the new Spurs stadium.
Yep.
Ajax are really good away, as we've seen when they did it over there in Madrid and in Turin. So this is the advantage that they're putting in. I just think this side is, wow.
Yeah.
I like this side. I think it's tremendous. De Ligt, you know, De Ligt, De Jong, you know, David Neres, Van de Beek. I mean, it's incredible. I love it. And I know you didn't say that, right, Joe, but I think for myself, you know, I'm kind of in their age group. So in a way, you could kind of relate to them. It's like, wow, this is awesome. Well, people my age doing this to the big boys.
Well, let's do this. Let's get our guest in here because, I mean, as a brilliant football mind, he's one of the best for me. Mr. Phil Brown, you know, thanks for coming on the show, mate. And I'm so glad you could join us tonight. We're talking about Spurs Ajax as one of the two legs in the semifinals of Champions League. And there are going to be challenges for both sides. Obviously, Ajax having to go to the new stadium and play Spurs in the first leg is going to be difficult because Spurs seems to play very, very well in this new pitch. But no Heung-min Song, no Harry Kane going to be there for the first leg. Song will come back after disciplinary, sitting out for disciplinary purposes. How do you see this first leg shaping up against these two, what we're calling two Davids, that are going to then face one of the two Goliaths in Liverpool or Barca?
Well, first of all, I think it works to Ajax's advantage that Spurs have just moved into the stadium. It doesn't feel like home yet. They lost there at the weekend against West Ham. And it's probably going to take about a year before that feels like it's a home stadium for them, where they have that level of familiarity. And it feels like it's their own stadium. I remember Arsene Wenger saying that about Arsenal. I also think Ajax and Spurs match up really well in terms of their quality. Spurs will let a team play football. That's the way they play. They're not a spoiler team. You remember Jose Mourinho talking about how they beat Ajax in the final with 8 of the same squad that's playing today, was by spoiling the game. Tottenham won't do that. I think they match up well. And I think, Ajax are playing my house money. So at this point, they got nothing to lose. Tottenham are the only one with anything to lose.
You know, Phil, I think it's been incredible to see this Ajax team do so well. The fact that, it's full of, I keep talking about youth, but it's full of youth. It's rejuvenating. It's nice because you look at a team. Yes, they are historically big. We have to admit that they were one of the best teams back in the 1970s. They did win a Champions League back in the 90s, with that great team. But this is kind of a rejuvenation. And you look at all the players on that team that have been just impressive. David Neres, De Ligt, De Jong, Van de Beek, even the goalkeeper, Ohana. I mean, out of all the players that you were able to see of this Ajax team, which one has impressed you the most? Because for me, I think, and as great as this seems, because I think he's going to be one of the best in a couple years' time if he isn't already, I think it's Matthias De Ligt. I mean, he's strong, good in the air, great tackling. The fact that he's the captain of Ajax at 19 just says it all. I mean, is he the one that has impressed you the most, or is it another player on this Ajax side?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I agree with your assessment that it's good for football to see this. I remember interviewing Frank de Boer a few years ago when he was at Ajax, and I asked him this question: does he ever think that a team like Ajax will ever reach a European Cup final again, considering how much the competition is dominated by teams with massive resources? And I remember him telling me that, look, for winning the Eredivisie, we get €3 million. For our TV contract, we get €10 million. So in order for us to get there, we have to get really lucky with the number of exceptional young players coming through, because they were getting their young players picked off even earlier. So it is a truly amazing accomplishment that they've got where they are. And I think it's a tremendous accolade to their coaches, because it's an exceptionally well-coached team. So it's good for football. It's good for the nostalgics amongst us who want to see these good, great European names back at the pinnacle of European football, where there was much more parity back in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s before money really took over when the Champions League started. So that's good for football fans. Again, Ajax haven't done this by spoiling. They've done this by playing attractive football, which is great to watch. As far as who stands out, it all depends on when you watch them. It's easy to say De Ligt and De Jong because they're obviously the two most exceptional young talents. Dusan Tadic has been incredible for them. If you look at his goals, his assist ratio, his goals ratio, it's incredible. I know he's not one of the most fashionable players. He's relatively coming. I think he's about 28, 29 after coming back from Southampton. Hakim Ziyech has been fantastic for them. So I think there's a number of young players. Obviously, De Jong and De Ligt are fantastic. I think De Ligt would be someone I'd love to see at Manchester United, a young, composed ball-playing centre-back. There's so many young talents in this Ajax team. It's hard to be impressed just by one of them. So many of them impress you. It just depends on when you watch them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I think just because it's unfortunate because, as you mentioned, I think that's how the money has really changed the way the sport has changed. The fact that, this team is going to be dismantled within a few months' time. But, here's hoping that, looking at the academy that Ajax, look at it, the majority of these players came from the academy. De Ligt is an academy product. De Jong, even though he didn't come from Ajax per se, it was bred into that Dutch football academy. A lot of these players have been bred onto that. So, it's not, would it be surprising that in the next few 10 years that we're going to see a new De Ligt, a new De Jong, you know, a new Neres, a new Tadic, you know, that kind of stuff. So I guess we just have to appreciate what we have there now. So now looking into, obviously, the other matchup happening, the Goliaths, as Joe was mentioning, it's Barcelona-Liverpool. Now, Joe and I were having a debate here, and obviously it's going to be interesting to see your perspective, being a Man United fan. But obviously, you know, these are two teams that are fighting essentially for a title that, you know, is expected of them to win. When you look at Barcelona, they already wrapped up La Liga. They're looking to win the Copa del Rey. Now the only big objective is to win the Champions League. Now for Liverpool, it's a different story because they're still in the title race for the Premier League, but they still also have that Champions League. Joe and I were debating in regards to what do you feel is much more important. Joe argued that the Champions League is more important because it just gives that more prestige in the Premier League. I argued that the Premier League, because I feel that for Liverpool fans, having not won the title in 30 years, being the, you know, the big team that has yet to win that Premier League title, I think for them it would be much more special than to win the Champions League. So from your end, how do you assess Liverpool heading into these, essentially these important games?
Well, the answer to the question, what's more important, it all depends on what football club you are. But for Liverpool, there's no question the Premier League is the most important. It's been too long since they've won it. They need to get that monkey off their back. They need to break that cycle. And, you know, they've won the Champions League. They won it in 2005. They would love to, obviously, it's a football club steeped in Champions League history. They've got five European Cups. They'd love to win a sixth. I would give them twice as many as Manchester United. And they are a football club that you have to say is football royalty and European royalty. They're a magnificent club. They're desperate for domestic success, though. They've come so close so many times. And I hate to say it, but I don't think they'll win it this year. And I think it's such a I think that it's been a brilliant title race. Liverpool have been virtually flawless. But one thing I will knock the Premier League for, because they've been quite quick to knock other leagues for this, is when we had these two horse races in La Liga, Premier League was often quite disrespectful of the other teams in La Liga to say it's always a two horse race. Well, the Premier League's been so dominated by Liverpool and Manchester City, I don't think it's healthy. Liverpool are incredibly, just like Ajax, well-coached team, just like Ajax, but greater than the sum of their parts. There's really no Galacticos, if you want to call them that, in that team. Jurgen Klopp's improved everyone. It's an exceptionally well-scouted team that plays within a system. You know, if you look at their signings, they've surprised everybody. Andy Robertson, you know, 8 million, I think they paid from Hull City, one of the best left-backs in the league now. Klopp improved him. Firmino, he improved. He improved Mane, who was another player who people were like, really, Sadio Mane? But now he's one of the best wingers in the league. Salah, when Salah came, we were like, really, Salah? And now we're looking at one of the top players in the world. Jordan Henderson, for me, an okay midfielder, but Klopp's made him more than what he is. You're now starting to see good form out of Naby Keita. So for me, I think Liverpool in the Champions League, I mean, a year or two ago, lost, of course, in the final to Real Madrid last season. Lost the Europa League final to Sevilla. They'd be desperate to make sure they end up with something. Mm-hmm. Between these two teams, for me, I think that you've got 21 players and a football god that transcends football, that is being blessed with a talent I've never seen in a human being in my life, and that's played football. And Maradona was a genius. Pelé was a genius. But Messi's the only player I've ever seen that absolutely nobody can stop. And when he's on his day, he can do what he wants. So for me, I think that's the difference. I give Barcelona the edge in this, but I wasn't overly impressed by Barcelona against Manchester United in both legs, and I think they're very, very beatable. And certainly it wouldn't surprise me to see Liverpool knock them out, but I'd still give Barcelona the edge.
Now, let me ask you this, Phil. Given that, you know, that Barcelona were unimpressive in their tie against Manchester United, and given that Liverpool really at this point not only need to win their matches out in the Premier League, but also need Manchester City to stumble, which they almost did on the weekend, but need them to stumble. Wouldn't it be better off for Liverpool to focus on this Champions League, where you're looking at a situation where they just need to win three matches and they're going to raise that European trophy, where if you look at the EPL, not only do they need to win those two matches, they need a stumble out of Manchester City to gain that title.
You know, everyone, and I say stumble, and then you think back to Steven Gerrard from a few years ago in the middle of the pitch. But wouldn't it?
Said that.
Wouldn't it benefit them to focus really on the task at hand in the Champions League? Because not that they want to throw away the EPL, but the fact that the EPL is going to require somebody else's intervention. They don't hold their own destiny in their hands.
Well, if it came down to having prioritized because your squad was incredibly decimated or you were fatigued or whatever, then fine. If you're talking about, you know, this is after Christmas, but we're really at a point where we're the last couple of games of the season. Liverpool have one away game left. That's at Newcastle. Liverpool and Newcastle are pretty close to each other. It's in the north of England. It's not we're traveling 4 hours on a different time zone away from home and you've got to prepare for this. You know, Newcastle is not a particularly difficult game either. And the last game is at home to Wolves. So they only play Barcelona once in between that. They played Barcelona twice. They'll play Barcelona first. But between Newcastle and Liverpool game, they've only got to play them once, which is... So I don't think they need to prioritise. I think when you get to this point, players want to play. They're playing on momentum. They're playing on adrenaline. And I don't think they're in a position, they've managed their squad well, it's deep enough where they have to prioritize one over the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you had to make a prediction right now between who would win the Champions or who would win each tie, who would you peg there?
You know, Spurs are starting to look very tired and you're starting to see the consequences of not bringing in players over the last two seasons. And they've lost confidence. They've lost form. That home pitch is not an advantage yet. So I think Ajax will beat them. Okay. Between Liverpool and Barcelona, you're tossing a coin. I mean, I think Barcelona will win it, but it's going to be razor thin. And I think it's going to be a game that right up to the last minute in the second leg will be alive. Mm-hmm. Liverpool are very, very, very dangerous on the attack. But I just think Barcelona have better players. And I think they'll win it.
Do you think Spurs changes their focus in the transfer window in this summer, seeing that they didn't bring in any players at all?
Spurs are not going to all of a sudden change the way they do business. This is the way they've done business for a long, long time. Right. When Arsenal moved into the new stadium, we were told this was so they could secure revenue to secure the top players. Well, that never happened. And I don't see it happening at Spurs either. I think they'll qualify for the Champions League. I think they'll keep Pochettino. But for Spurs, it's about keeping their players rather than what they're going to add. They'll bring players in this summer, I have no doubt. But Eriksen's down to the last year of his contract, and it's imperative they keep him. They need to get Dele Alli's form back. Mm-hmm. And they need to find an alternative to Harry Kane, because when he gets injured, Llorente or Janssen's just not good enough.
Right, there are no answers there. I agree. Nope. Let's. I would be remiss not to talk about Manchester United before we let you go tonight. And and for our listeners, if you're not catching Phil's pod, you guys are crazy. You need to go catch it. It's on Beyond the Pitch. So, but obviously United signs Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to the permanent contract on March 28th, like I'd said in my opening monologue. Until that point, I want to say United had won 14 of 17 as a caretaker manager.
That's right.
But since then, they have lost 6 of 8. And there's been some type of rift in the locker room that has come out into the public somehow. And some have said that it actually is along racial lines where the black players are kind of against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the white players are not. And some people have said, I've heard this rumbling.
Where did you read that?
I've seen it on Twitter a couple of times in a couple of
spots.
Anybody
postulating that's an absolute idiot.
Perfect. That's good. There you go. That answers that easily then.
Anybody that's saying there's a racial divide within United's dressing room is just talking. I don't know. I want to be careful with my language, but
yeah.
There's plenty of reasons for players to not be happy at Manchester United. And look, the players wanted Solskjaer. So, because United were going to give the job to Michael Carrick and they gave it to Solskjaer. They looked at other alternatives. The problem that you have to understand with Manchester United in that they're unique. This is a football club that, unlike most other top clubs, if you fire a manager at Bayern Munich, they don't stand still in the transfer market. They'll still recruit. They'll still bring players in because there's football people making football decisions. So United don't do that. United needed to have somebody in place by about March so that they could prepare for the summer. Mm-hmm. This is a big summer. So I completely understand why they gave Solskjaer the job at the time. Of course, after Paris, they were in a situation where they had to give it to him. Mm-hmm. But there, everybody, every United fan knew this was a risk. They knew that this was could quite easily go wrong. Nobody was 100% convinced. But Solskjaer still can't be judged until he brings his own players in. There's massive disharmony at the club above Solskjaer. You know, there's a football culture that needs to be set at United, but also a professional culture of professionalism, of players being fit, being actual professionals that you expect the bare minimum of players to be fit and to have the right attitude. You can forgive bad games, you can forgive bad players, bad performances, whatever, but you can't forgive players not being fit and not being committed. Eden Hazard wants to leave Chelsea, but what is he doing? He's playing out of his skin to get that move. So there's massive disruption amongst United above them, because it's basically asking a five-year-old to drive a Ferrari and then wonder why he keeps hitting the wall with it. And then expect one day he's going to be able to drive it and win a race. Well, people think that there's going to be progress this summer, not if the same people are making the same decisions to put the club in this situation in the first place. And I don't see anything changing. And when you've got your manager coming out saying we're at least 3 years away from challenging for the title, what does that say to David De Gea? What does that say to Paul Pogba? They don't care. They want to go and win titles now. Right. So it's no surprise to me that United's best players want to leave. They can't renew the contracts of players they'd like to keep. They can renew the contracts of players nobody else wants. And that's why they're in this mess. It is nothing more than gross mismanagement. When United played City, the difference was 14 million between the two teams in terms of what it cost to construct. The difference in quality was light years. It's just down to gross mismanagement, and it'll continue until United change the way they do business.
So let me ask you this. You know, three players that come to mind that, you know, are they going to be there next year, next season, or are they going to move on in the summer window? Obviously, the first one, and the rumor is Paul Pogba, possibly going to Real Madrid, possibly going with Eden Hazard. Is Paul Pogba there at the beginning of the season next year?
I don't think so.
No. Second one, David De Gea. You know, some people have even said that maybe De Gea needs a break, you know, and to kind of move on from United. Is De Gea there at the end?
Well, possibly, because I think he's young enough as a goalkeeper where if he stayed another year, it wouldn't be terminal to his career. Mm-hmm. But United dropped him the last time they were in a contract situation with him. Van Gaal left him out for Romero and didn't put him back in until that situation was sorted. So I think this is the worst time for him to lose form in terms of his contract negotiations and everything else. But I think he could still be there next season, but I don't think he's there this season after. I think this is him done.
Okay. Last one is probably the most expensive cheerleader on the planet and somebody that I would bet they would want to get rid of, and that's Alexis Sanchez. Whether Alexis Sanchez is there, is United able to move him in this window?
Well, United have basically one question to ask themselves. Does it cost more to keep him or more to get rid of him? And right now they're paying $500,000 a week for a glorified dog walker, right? he's got one more goal than dogs, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, given the disharmony that it's caused in the dressing room with other players rightly saying, I want that money too, considering he's doing nothing for it, again, a problem of United's own making, I think they have to get rid of him. But, you know, Solskjaer said, what are they going to do? Sell De Gea, Pogba, Lukaku? Lukaku wants to go to Sanchez. You could sell all of them. I have zero, zero, zero confidence that what will replace them will be at the very least equal or better. Right. It won't. That requires planning. It requires a strategy. And United don't do either of those particularly well. Most of their signings are agent-driven, as you can see. The agents call and saying, this player's, well, after you, this player, okay, he's quite good. And then wondering why they don't fit in the system. So until that strategy changes, I have no confidence that any of the players that we brought in, I don't even think they're capable of signing more than 3-4 players in the window. That requires a professional aptitude that United don't have.
No, I agree. And to do it in that mode where you would get rid of a De Gea, a Pogba, and Alexis Sanchez, and maybe even one or two other pieces, would be such a tear down and build up that it wouldn't be fair to Solskjaer to have to battle that back, because he would be the focus of the poor performance that you would expect to have once you get rid of that kind of talent, and it would just fall on his shoulder squarely. I don't think it would be fair to him. So they can't necessarily burn it to the ground and rebuild like a Monaco or a Marseille or something like that. They really need to pick and choose their pieces and then reconstruct accordingly. I think that's going to be the way to do it.
I think like I said, the most important thing for Solskjaer is to get a dressing room of players that actually want to play for the club. But the problem is the culture in any business is set from the top down. And when you sign brands, when you sign players and you evaluate them and based on their commercial value to you, and you tell the manager you can't get rid of a player because he's worth too much to us commercially, then you've killed him anyway. This is what happens at Chelsea. You know, Chelsea take away that ability of their managers to move players out. When you don't know who your boss is, and you know who isn't your boss, you know the manager's not your boss, you don't have respect for that person. Right. And so that has to change. The whole focus of the football club, it's a football club that is a business that happens to play football. Until they get that done in reverse, that's a football club that happens to be also make money, mm-hmm. then the what's on the field will reflect exactly what's off the field. And so you see 11 players that aren't compatible, that aren't playing, that aren't in a system, that haven't been scouted, that are essentially 11 Instagram brands. And this is what happens. So, you know, when United interviewed Jurgen Klopp, they tried to sell the club on the back of it being adult Disneyland. I mean, that's ridiculous. Richard Arnold's come out and said, we've got 18 George Clooney's, which is gives you an idea of what type of madness that goes on inside that club. It's not a football club. It's almost a business that has a Sunday team based on its employees. It's ridiculous. And so how can you ever expect to compete with football clubs that take winning seriously when you don't take winning seriously yourself? Let me put it like this, guys. Mm. The owners of this football club and Woodward would celebrate the success. If finishing last on the table got you the most revenue, that would be United's goal.
Right. Right.
That's a shame, I think. That's a huge shame if that's the case.
I agree.
Well, you know, this is what happens. United would never let football people make business decisions for obvious reasons, because they value aptitude and they value money. But they let football people make business people make football decisions who don't know what they're doing. And so you get what you get. You get exactly what you have. The succession planning since Ferguson has been utterly appalling. It's been one calamity to the next. Moyes, Van Gaal. Van Gaal sacked the day he won the FA Cup. Why disgraceful was that?
Yeah.
Mourinho gave him a new contract, then chose not to give him the players that he wanted in the summer. They were half committed to him. Sanchez's contract, De Gea's contract. Don't forget, United were here 4 years ago with this contract situation and almost lost them. And here they are again. Hander Herrera, a player they wanted to keep, losing him. Mata, Fellaini got a new contract, then gone a couple of months later. Rojo got a new contract. And quite frankly, Marcus Rojo is no business being at a professional football club, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So this is Darmian. You know, these players are ornaments. Why are you giving them new contracts?
Yeah, very true.
So, yeah. So look, until that, because they don't want to lose them for free. So it's cheaper to keep them fee-netted and say, here's a player, than go out and actually scout somebody and sign someone. I don't know. I assume all United's 57 scouts will get up in the morning and say, dib, 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 and have a toggle. Because I don't believe they're actually football scouts. 57 global scouts. And yet they somehow come up with Matteo Darmian.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe they're not real scouts. Maybe they're out pitching a tent and having campfires with toggles and telling dip, dip, dip. I see how many scouts I can imagine that United employed 57 of.
Phil, I don't
Boy Scouts, maybe right. Boy Scouts.
No, I don't think they left the pub to go and watch the match. I think they stayed and had an extra pint, if you ask me.
Well, on a few other things than that, with their pints, I would say. I don't know, maybe a big bag of mushrooms or something, because I don't know what they're watching.
I'll have what they're having then, if that's the case.
No doubt. But I have an excuse. You know, I do the mushrooms watching Game of Thrones. They're supposed to be watching football players. it's frustrating, boys.
I agree, man.
Have them recruit us, and let's build a team that can actually win. Maybe that'd be better, or we can just get Phil to do everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I could probably catch a little more talent than them, that's for sure. So, Phil, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us and giving us so much time, mate. It's always a pleasure, mate. I can't wait to talk to you soon, man.
Yes, thanks for everything you do. Hope you enjoyed Newcastle, Roberto. And
thank you.
It was
amazing. It was amazing.
Cheers, folks.
All right, mate. Talk soon.
You.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. The great Phil Brown. That's amazing. That is so awesome. Oh, and I'm sorry, if you're going to have, you know, for any of the other podcasters that listen to the show, if you're going to have Phil Brown on your show, you have to talk United because the man is in the know, you know? I mean, last year, I'm pretty sure it was last year, he interviewed Paul Pogba.
Yeah, right? He did. That's right. Stelzaliano did as well.
Yep. So, I mean, look at another great friend of our show, right? So, I mean, those guys are completely in the know, and we're happy to have them as friends, and always great to talk to Phil. And he's been really supportive of me, you know, through this tough time. So, and on a personal level, thank you, Phil. Thank you for everything. Rob, I know we had a couple of things we wanted to talk about. We are running wicked short on time. I want to talk about Libertadores, man, because I know we are we're towards the second half of the group stages here. But you know, as much as I know about Libertadores, it is actually your job to know about Libertadores, literally.
Humble brag. That's
so,
a big humble brag to have.
So why don't you take us through? Because I mean, I'm looking at it right now, and so far we've played 5 matches. And we're almost at the bitter end here for a couple of these groups, but there's still some things to be decided, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have 10 teams already qualified to the round of 16. It is yet to be decided whether or not a lot of these teams will either be in pot 1 or pot 2, because as you know, Joe, they don't do the kind of, I think we used the March Madness reference, I think back in the day. They don't do the first seed against 16 seed. It's all going to be a draw. It's going to be a draw, similar to what they do in the Champions League. So at the moment, we currently have 4 Brazilian teams, 3 Paraguayan teams, 2 Argentine teams, and a Uruguayan team. Obviously, the best team at the moment, if we have to pick one, is Cruzeiro. They've won all 5 of their games. They have not conceded a goal yet, Joe. That's crazy. Just how special they are.
I was just looking at
so
that.
They're a team to really look out for. But at the moment, there are still teams that have yet to qualify for the next stage. The biggest one, I think, for me, is Flamengo. Flamengo, obviously, a team that, you know, I don't know if you know about this, Joe, but they spent their most expensive transfer in Brazilian history, getting Jorginho de Azcarreta, Jorginho de Azcarreta, ironically from Cruzeiro, and they have Gabigol. So they have a team that, on paper, is expected to win the Copa Libertadores, but now they're looking at a good situation where they need to beat Peñarol on the final day. It's going to be on May 8th, so they still got a couple of days left, and they have to hope that San Jose do not get a result as well. They have to beat Liga de Quito in order for them to qualify to the round of 16.
Right.
That being said, that's going to be the biggest one, because I personally think if Flamengo do not qualify for this round of 16, it will go down as one of the biggest failures, I think, in the history of this competition, because they're a team that is assembling to, you know, win the Brazilian title, Brazilian Cup, Libertadores, that kind of stuff. Right. For them to fall at the first hurdle to have this embarrassment would be a damn shame. But yeah, you still also have teams of Boca Juniors are still fighting for a spot as well in the Libertadores, obviously with a new manager, you know, trying to get rid of the demons of what happened a couple months ago against River back in Madrid. So they're still looking in there. And yeah, it's been fascinating. I think for myself on a personal level, I'm happy to see Cerro Porteño. Obviously, we're in the round of 16, but we still need to decide if we're going to go for a first spot or a second spot. I would love to play the first seed. Honestly, because I think that would avoid the other Paraguayan teams, who Libertad and Olimpia, who are expected to win their group as well if all results go their way. So, yeah, it's been fascinating. I've been really intrigued. It's, from a personal level, I enjoy it. So I think the real fun starts in the round of 16. And looking at all the teams that have qualified for that team, I'm like, wow, I'm seriously excited for the draw. But, yeah, it's been fascinating. And, you know, still a lot of storylines to happen, a lot of controversy, as you would typically expect in South America. I mean, I've seen blackouts happening. I think it was in Venezuela a couple weeks ago because of the whole power outage happening in the country. You know, you've seen – I've yet to see – I don't think I've seen a dog invasion yet, Joe. I've yet to see a dog invasion, but there's a funny game. I think this was posted, I think, the first day of the Libertadores. I think it was from Adam Brandon or Simon Edwards, who were fascinating – our wonderful followers to follow when it comes to South American football. They have like a bingo type of game where you have to like cross it out every time you see something that only happens in the Libertadores that doesn't happen in the Champions League, like a power outage or an overflown, like a flooded pitch or something along those lines. So yeah, it's been fascinating, and I'm really excited to see what happens within the next few days.
Definitely. Libertad already through, by the way, as Group H winners in this one. Right now, that second spot is going to be decided by either Gremio or Universidad Católica from Chile, which match, those two play each other May 8th for that spot. Interesting, too, Boca Juniors, like you had mentioned, are going to face Atlético Paranaense on May 9th.
Home at the Bombonera. So I think that's going to decide the winners there of that group.
And I think at that point, Boca wins the match and they'll get through, because it won't matter what Tolima or George Wisterman will do in the other matchup, because they'll both be too far ahead and they'll both advance to the round of 16 with a Boca win. Definitely interesting about the other one that you had mentioned with Flamengo, which they could fall all the way down to the Sudamericana if Quito
or elimination if that's the case.
No, mathematically no, they're safe in, but Quito could get in, especially if Flamengo loses to Peñarol, and then it would be Quito and Peñarol moving through Peñarol as group winners, and then Flamengo would, like you said, such a massive team to be sent to the Sudamericana would just be a huge
that's a huge failure. Even though they're still fighting for a competition that they could technically win, that's still a big, big stain for them. And because that's something that they did not want to do.
And the other thing you think about here, and just correct me if I'm wrong, sure. You know, Cerro Porteño could go through as group winners with a draw.
That's right.
Olympia could go through with a draw as well as group winners.
Yes,
you've already got Libertad through, so the Paraguayan side is doing very, very well in this tournament.
Yeah, I think up until a couple of days ago, they were all unbeaten in all the games. In fact, Olympia are the only team that have yet to lost a game. Libertad and Cerro did lose, but they do have more points because of more wins that they have. But yeah, it's been fascinating. Definitely. It's the first time that we see three Paraguayan teams in a long time in the round of 16. So. And, yeah, it's going well. I mean, as we kind of mentioned, I think, Joe, back in one of our previews that we've done for the Copa America, you know, a lot of those players, you know, are kind of on the old side and maybe are not selective enough for national team status, but they're still doing exceptionally well in the league and especially in a competition like this. So yeah. It's really awesome to see.
No doubt about it. So those matches will be up next week, and we're probably going to pick a couple of matches to put in our matches of the week. But let's do our matches of the week this week because we're running out of time, Rob. On Tuesday, like I mentioned, tomorrow, Tottenham Hotspur Ajax, Tuesday, 3 p.m. And again, all times are Eastern. On Wednesday, we have Barca Liverpool, the other semifinal in the Champions League. That's going to be at 3 p.m. And the CONCACAF Champions League final second leg, Rob, is Wednesday night. Monterrey versus Tigres. Currently, Monterrey ahead 1-0 on aggregate with a road goal. So we'll have to see if they can hold on and win that title, or if Tigres will come through there. On Thursday, the Europa League, Arsenal Valencia 3-0 in their first leg. I'm sorry, 3-0, 3 p.m. And Chelsea Eintracht Frankfurt 3 p.m. on Thursday as well. That is a massive, massive matchup. Giving, you know, you've got Eden Hazard in that one. You're going to see if Gonzalo Higuain can get back onto form. You've got Luka Jovic over at Eintracht Frankfurt that a lot of people are looking at. So I think that is definitely a marquee matchup in the Europa League for sure. Then, Rob, believe it or not, the way our matches of the week worked out, you can take Saturday off, man. So get some yard work in, you know. If it's sunny where you are, hit the beach or something, because all our big matches are going to be Sunday. You're definitely going to be want to be on the couch for this one. Starting at 6 a.m., Getafe Girona on 6 a.m. in La Liga. Obviously, you're looking at positions. You're actually a battle of Champions League and relegation in that one.
That's right.
With Getafe.
Wonderful season for Getafe so far.
Yep. Yeah, incredible. And they won on the weekend as well, so... Going to be interesting to see if they can manage to hang on to that top spot. And then another matchup that will give us a Champions League taste is the Serie A match at 9 a.m. We have Lazio-Atalanta. Atalanta currently in that fourth spot, Rob. Could you imagine a round of 16 matchup between Atalanta and Getafe in the Champions League if they all move through? Wouldn't that be crazy? But
that's a hipster choice if there is one.
Oh yeah, but Atalanta won again today, so they're currently in that spot. Lazio,
we need more Papu Gomez in our life, so we have to give Atalanta the advantage.
I always said that, and then I guess we got some boring matchups. No, I'm just kidding. In the EPL, Sunday 11:30, Arsenal, Brighton, and Hove Albion. Brighton playing for to stay out of that relegation spot. Arsenal trying to get into the top four to get into Champions League. Then we have the Bundesliga matchup. Excuse me. Bayer Leverkusen, Eintracht Frankfurt, Sunday at 12 p.m. Again, another European spot position matchup there. Ligue 1, Lyon-Lille, Sunday 3 p.m. This is huge because this is going to decide who is going to get the automatic spot into the Champions League next season and who is going to have to play their way in. Currently, these two teams sit second and third in Ligue 1. And then on Sunday night, 8 p.m., DC United, Columbus Crew. DC losing on the weekend, and I was going to put the LAFC matchup in here, but I felt like we need to go somewhere else at the moment. But LAFC really missed an opportunity yesterday, Rob. They drew Seattle Sounders 1-1 in Seattle after beating them previously in the week 4-1. They Christian Ramirez misses an absolute sitter from 2 feet in front of the goal, sends it over the net, which is almost physically impossible. But it would have won the match for LAFC, and he missed that. You never know if that goal will come back to haunt them, but LAFC right now look like massive, massive early favorites in MLS to really take home that title. So, Rob, I'll give you the trivia question real quick again. Sergio Aguero scored the only goal in the 1-0 victory against Burnley. We call this a game of inches. How far over the line was the ball?
I saw this. I don't think this was the exact number, but I know it's. I can give you a rough estimate. I could be wrong. I think it was 30 millimeters, last I checked.
29.51 millimeters over the line. And that
I think
could
the
be
Liverpool and the Liverpool one, I think, was 11 last I checked.
And those millimeters could be the difference between an EPL title or not. So, Rob, without anything left on the docket, my friend, I think we're gonna hit the closing music. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So let's get it all fired up and rolling here. And four. Episode 240 of Low Limit Football. Special thanks again to Phil Brown for joining us tonight. Next week, we're going to be back and talking about recap of leg one of the Champions League semifinals, recap of the Europa League semifinals leg one, and we're going to look at the CONCACAF Champions League champion, which will be crowned on Wednesday night. So, for episode 240 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.